Welcome to this week's episode of Talking Rugby Podcast, the rugby show by the fans, for the fans. Dave O'Grady has taken 2 weeks off to sun himself in Turkey, so this is Alan here as a stand-in host, and we have a lot to get through this week, some exciting matches coming up, most notably a certain match in Limerick. So we'll be talking Rabobank Rec Pro 12, Rugby Championship, and the Top 14 as well. Joining me this week, first of all, is our Kiwi friend Matt, who'll be talking about the Rugby Championship. Matt, good evening.
Good evening, everyone. Thanks for inviting me to the show, Alan. And yeah, look forward to discussing the Rugby Championship, which should come to an exciting conclusion this weekend.
And also on the show this week is our French man living in Limerick, Etienne, back on the show. And I know you're looking forward to talking a lot more about the Top 14.
Hello, everyone. Yes, definitely a lot of action in Top 14. So, you know, we'll be taking time to look at it in details.
Excellent stuff. And now we have our two provincial zealots who'll be talking about Munster, Leinster in particular. And first of all, I'd like to welcome Brian on the show. Brian was, I suppose you could say, a kind of a talking rugby oldie. He was on episode 8. But on that episode, his sound quality wasn't great. It sounded like he was in a kind of a washing machine. But his sound is much better this time. So, evening, Brian. How are you getting on?
Not so bad, Alan. Thanks for having me on. New and improved computer now, so hopefully it goes a bit better.
Excellent stuff. And finally, our Leinster provincial zealot, Rob. How are you getting on?
How's it going, Alan? Yeah, not bad.
Good stuff. And sure, we'll get straight into it. Munster, Leinster. But before, just before that, we'll first of all talk about the Munster Dragons match. Munster winning 23-9. I suppose a decent enough win, but I think, Brian, would you be disappointed that the Munster didn't get the bonus point there?
I suppose I would. I mean, you know, a home game to the Dragons, you'd normally be expecting us to get the four tries, but... it's worth noting that, you know, the Dragons themselves have improved a lot since last year, and they're a better outfit, especially defensively. No, it was a weakened team to the one that was weakened Dragons team to the one that was playing the week before, because they're targeting next weekend as a kind of a better chance to win. But they had a lot of young guys out, and they seemed to perform well. In saying that, I don't think we performed that well either. And you know, it's kind of typical to the how we played in the Rabo last year. A lot of I don't think we're going through the phases enough, and you know, some of these tactics that haven't seemed to work in the past, Penny seems to be persisting with them, like having Paul O'Connell out in the wing for crossfield kicks. Which is kind of depending on the winger, you know, O'Connell batting it, the ball back down to the winger who's coming onto it. You can see logistically where he's coming from there. He's using his height out on the wing, but I mean, it, you know, there's a lot of variables have to come into play there for that to work out. So, you know, it was far from a perfect performance, but I suppose we still got the win, and better to get a win going into next week than lose.
Yeah, I mean, one criticism that I think a lot of people had of the Munster performance is that we never really got the backline going, and the Dragons were kind of able to shut us down fairly easily. Now, the Dragons have looked an improved side this year under Lynn Jones, who's the new coach. Was that something that might be of a concern to you? Because, of course, I think all the tries were scored by forwards.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that really worked well for us was our rolling maul. So I suppose that's a positive. But again, under Penny, we've had a real kind of problem with flair and incision in the back line, where we're just too lateral. And I don't think JJ Hanrahan had his best game at the weekend. Still seems a bit raw for it, and it's not really surprising that Penny has come out since and more or less back Keighley for the next two games. But look, we seem to come a bit better, come hiding cup in the backs. I think Dineen and Earls isn't an ideal centre partnership. I don't think Earls is a 13. I think he's better on the wing. And I think we'll be much improved with Lualala at 13 and Earls on the wing. And hopefully Zeebo ups his performance as well, because I don't think he's been great by his own high standards for the first two games. So if Zeebo ups it, I think we'll be a bit more threatening in the back, especially back line with Keighley and Murray to come back in.
Yeah, certainly Zeebo has been a little bit quiet. I know he did set up one of the tries in Treviso for Keith, but you know, he's such a key player for us, and definitely we need him firing on all cylinders, certainly against Leinster. But just before we get on to the match on Saturday, Rob, Leinster, Cardiff, myself, Brian and yourself are all there to soak up the atmosphere in the RDS. And another 14-point win for Leinster, just as Munster, they beat Dragons by 14. What did you make of the match? And I'm sure you were impressed by the returning Brian O'Driscoll.
Oh, absolutely. I was delighted to see O'Driscoll's return. I thought he was an absolute class game for himself there. But I have to be honest, I actually thought we could have done better. The final score probably could have been bigger. We could have been more clinical. Our defence could have been a little bit better. I thought our defence definitely wasn't the greatest I've seen.
Rob, what did you make of Cardiff showing? Because last year they didn't really show up at all. But this year the Lions came back and you could nearly argue they all had good games. Warburton was kind of blowing in the first 15, 20 minutes, but he really got into the game.
Yeah, absolutely. It took Warburton a few minutes to settle, but once he did, I thought he had a great game. And then obviously Halfpenny as well, another great game for himself.
And O'Driscoll. How amazing was he? You know, some of the play, some of the breaks, the hands. You know, it was just absolutely fantastic to see him back in a Leinster jersey. And of course, you know, there's not going to be that many more appearances. So I suppose for not just Leinster fans but Irish rugby fans, we almost need to you know, appreciate the performances that he's left in him.
Yeah, I think fans of rugby in general just need to savour the time we have left with O'Driscoll. Every game he plays is going to be a bonus, especially in the game on the weekend there. He was showing the flashes of brilliance, where he's almost too good for the players around him. He passed the ball to Rue that Rue just barely got his hands onto, you know?
Yeah, and, you know, Cuthbert there got an excellent try. I think it was definitely worth the entrance fee alone, and you know, he's a class player. And you know, certainly Cardiff, they did show up. And I think Leinster fans will be a bit disappointed that they might not get the bonus point. I think certainly a bonus point would have been nearly expected given what happened last year. But in another way, you could say that it was a good run out and a good test for the Munster match.
Yeah, absolutely. I suppose as all the Lions are coming back, it's good to get the rust off, blow away the cobwebs, especially heading into not only Munster match, but having half an eye on the Heineken Cup the week after.
Absolutely, and you know, so many big games coming up, and of course it all starts this Saturday, Munster Leinster, quarter to seven, I think, on RT2 on Saturday. And Brian, are you looking forward to it? It's Leinster's drive for five and Munster's drive for one.
Yeah, well, I suppose it's this point of the year when the season really begins. I mean, everything else is kind of building up to this game, and this game in itself is always building up to the first round of the Heineken Cup. But I think first and foremost, from a Munster perspective, we'll be getting that monkey off our back and finally actually beating Leinster again. Because while a lot of people talked about us putting in a good performance in Thomond last year against Leinster, we still lost the game to our biggest rivals in our backyard. So it's hopefully it's something we can right and finally get a win.
Yeah, and what kind of starting 15 are you looking to be selected there? Murray, we're not sure if he's going to be even on the bench for this. I know you mentioned there Laulala coming back at 13, that you want to see Keith on the wing. So I suppose Keatley at 10, you'd be thinking?
Yeah, Keatley at 10. He's going to start at 10 now because Penny's come out and backed him today, and I think it's the right decision. I think JJ is still a bit green. Elsewhere, I'd probably go one interesting selection is going to be at Loosehead prop, where you've got young James Cronin who's come through, and he's, you know, he's a really abrasive young carrier. Seems a good scrum reader too, and he seems to be really putting pressure on Dave Kilcoyne. So I wouldn't be surprised to see James Cronin start. I think he'll definitely feature. In what capacity, I'm not sure yet, but I suppose that's up to Rob Penny. And then I suppose you have the back row selection, which is going to be somewhat tricky as well, especially with Tommy O'Donnell out, because he gave a lot of balance to the Munster's back row. So probably if it was just a case of getting our strongest back row onto the field, you'd be talking Peter O'Mahony, CJ Stander, and Colin at eight. but there's the argument that that might be a little imbalanced and Sean Dougal might get in at 7 just to make things, you know, a bit more fluid in the back row.
Would you argue, I suppose, when you talk about the unbalanced back row, but on the other hand, you could probably say that in the loose, in terms of carrying that Stander, O'Mahony and Colin might be a bit more kind of impactful on the game?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, they're three really good ball carriers, but then I've never seen Stander at 7. I'm told he can play there, but I wouldn't, you know, have much confidence of putting him in there on his first start at seven. But and then you could switch Peter O'Mahony to 7, but I don't think he's an out and out 7. He's a much better 6. So why not play him in his best position? I don't know. I still haven't made up my mind on it, but I think Dougal slotting in at 7, he's not the best player Munster have, but you know, there's a bit more balance to that back row, and you know, we're going to need to be as fluid as possible against Leinster, especially in attack and in defence. In terms of
now, one interesting selection as well would be at scrum half, wouldn't it? Because I don't think Murray is going to be right for it by the sounds of it. So, assuming he isn't fit, who would you have in there, Williams or Sheridan?
I know Duncan Williams isn't the most popular scrum half in the world, but I do think Sheridan is a better player. But defensively, I think Williams is solid. And I know I'm kind of stuck in it. I'd like to see Sheridan get the start, but then again, there's pluses for starting Williams as well. So if you had to push me to it, I suppose I'd start Sheridan.
But now, Rob, and just coming on to Rob there about the Leinster team that you'd like to see, what would be the kind of the selection issues that you'd want to see a particular player get selected? Maybe a couple of difficult selections there for Matt O'Connor, just for example, at number 10 between Goppert and Madigan.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's probably the sort of biggest selection headache that Matt O'Connor will have. Goppert's obviously been class. You're always going to miss a player of Sexton's standing, but Goppert's really taken on the role very well. And I suppose you could also argue that Madigan really needs one more chance to lay down a marker for the Heineken Cup.
And would you think Lottie Takiri, if he's back fit, could he feature? Do you think he could be a sort of a first choice selection while he's at Leinster, or is he simply just a cover player?
I'd probably see him as more a cover player. I'd say, depending on if he's fit or if Luke's fit, they'll probably spot in there 23.
Yeah, I mean, certainly, I it's kind of a bizarre signing in a way, because Kirshner will be back, I think, in 2 weeks' time, because I know he'll be playing at the weekend, but then I assume he's available to Leinster then. So, you know, we mightn't see a lot of Takiri, which is kind of a shame, because, you know, he's such a marquee name in rugby and, you know, one of the best players in the world a couple of years back, but you know, we'll see what happens with him. I'm hearing, Rob, that Jordy Murphy might be out. So would he have gotten into your team had he been fit?
Yeah, he definitely would have. But for my back row, I've gone with McLaughlin, Sean O'Brien and Heaslip. Obviously, Sean O'Brien, it's his first game back from Lions duty and his layoff there. So just start him, get rid of the cobwebs early. And hopefully you watch him tear it up. I also think Heaslip will be looking to maybe right a few wrongs from last week. I think he was last week he was maybe industrious, but not very effective.
Yeah, I get you, yeah. Matt, just as a kind of a neutral watching this, who do you think is under more pressure for this game? Because Leinster, of course, have won the last four matches against us. So, and Munster, of course, could really do with the win, but would a lot of Leinster fans, do you think, expect Leinster to win now that they have beaten Munster so often in the recent past?
I think Munster's under more pressure for this game, to be honest. I mean, for a start, obviously, the game is at Thurman Park, and then, as you say as well, Munster hasn't beaten Leinster for a while now. And there's also the expectation that this is Rob Penny's second season, and he needs to start finding some results. So although Leinster will obviously go down to the game with an expectation that they can certainly get the victory, I would think that Munster would be more disappointed with a loss than Leinster would be at this stage of the season. So I think the pressure is definitely more on the Munster side, to be honest.
And Brian, just come back to you. Could this match be a bit of a phony war? Because some of the Munster-Leinster matches in the recent past haven't been the best spectacles. And some people have said that it's because the Heineken Cup is looming the week after, and maybe not all attention is on the match from the players' point of view. But, you know, surely for a derby like this, surely, you know, for the players, it's 100% into this and then worry about Europe after.
Yeah, I think it might be slightly different this year because there's a lot more competition for places, especially among Munster and even in Leinster to an extent. There's more competition. So I think that you're going to have guys going out there to prove points, like James Cronin and David Kilcoyne. You know, just one example of, you know, two guys that are, you know, by no means guaranteed their places. Same with Sheridan and Williams. Both of them are going to be looking to be on the bench for the Heineken Cup when Murray comes back. So, you know, I don't think there's anyone going to be minding themselves next weekend. Now, whether it turns out to be a good spectacle for rugby or, you know, a good game of rugby is another thing. But I think it's going to be a high-intensity game anyway. What will be interesting to see is if Martin Moore is on the field at any stage. I don't think he'll start. I think Ross is going to start. But Moore really impressed me last week against Cardiff. Seems a really decent scrummager. In the loose, probably not 100% there yet. I think he needs a bit more conditioning. But he seems a really good prospect because one thing we're lacking in Ireland is scrummaging tight heads. And I think Stephen Archer from Munster is another guy who's come on leaps and bounds. So it'll be interesting to see how they go because I'm expecting both of them to feature at some stage over.
I actually think maybe the Leinster-Munster matches never really classics, but I feel they're always bruising encounters, and that's probably what you want in the week before the Heineken Cup. Just make sure the players are, you know, battle ready, I suppose, for the games.
But and where would the match kind of rank in the priority list for you, Rob? Because, you know, some fans would say that, no, it's all about Europe. Look, I'll sacrifice a loss to the provincial rivals any day, just as long as we do well in Europe. Or could it be kind of on its own tier? You know, you have your normal Rabo matches, then you have the derby, and then you have the Heineken Cup.
I'd actually agree with that. I never want to lose to Munster, so I always want
to. And I never want to lose to Leinster. So.
Yeah, exactly. So I think both sets of fans nearly feel that, you know. You obviously have to have half an eye maybe on Europe, but it sort of stands out there on its own tier, as you were saying, as a sort of special match, yeah.
And Brian, you know, we've mentioned the tens on both sides. If it is Keatley versus Madigan, which I suppose with our Irish hat on, we'd hope to see Madigan at 10. It is a big match and it'll be very, all eyes will be on that personal battle because, you know, it could well be that one of them will be on the bench because Paddy Jackson isn't really doing himself justice at the moment.
Yeah, I think Jackson has a lot of problems with his kicking game at the moment and they've kind of followed him in through last season. But hopefully, I'd like to, from an Ireland perspective, I'd like to see Madigan starting at the weekend, of course. But from a Munster perspective, I'm not really sure which Leinster out half I'd rather face. I think Madigan's a better defender than Gopperth, but Gopperth has a brilliant kicking game, which could come really handy down in Croke Park, in Thomond Park. In saying that, I think if Madigan turns it on, he could cause a lot more damage. But from a modern perspective, I'd definitely like to see Madigan and JJ go head-to-head because I think they're vying it out for the, you know, test bench spot for Ireland.
Matt, one little thing that I kind of realised today about the match was that this could be Brian O'Driscoll's last match in Limerick. Could that be a motivating factor for the Leinster players? They mightn't say it in front of Brian because I don't think Brian is that sort of chap, but, you know, do you think a couple of young lads could be saying to each other, like, look, let's go down to Limerick and let's get a win for Brian. It's his last game in, you know, in Limerick.
Yeah, quite possibly. I mean, I think this season there's going to be a lot of last games for Brian, as it were, obviously his last chance to play the All Blacks later in the season. But then, you know, as you say, this might be the last chance to play Munster at Thurman Park. So, I'm sure, as you say, Brian's not the kind of person to dwell on that, but it wouldn't be any harm for O'Connor to whisper it in a few of the players' ears, as you say, the younger guys, and see if they can sort of do it for Brian, as it were. So, yeah, that could come into play, and it might be something, you know, a motivating factor to make the Leinster players just do that a little bit.
Now, we'll come to kind of a match prediction. Brian, what do you think about this match? Do you expect Munster to win, or will Leinster make it 5 in a row?
Just before I give a prediction, I just want to say I had the pleasure of seeing Brian O'Driscoll in the flesh again last week, and I think it's important that for myself that I got to see him as many times as I could before he does retire, and he didn't disappoint. I mean, he's in terms of it's kind of a cliche saying that young people could learn a lot from watching him play, but I mean, if you want to play outside centre and you're a young guy, I mean, all you have to do is watch Brian O'Driscoll playing a game, because his ability to suck in defenders and offload, I mean, second to none. I mean, he's the greatest player I've ever seen playing the game, and you know, it's a pleasure seeing him in the flesh again. But in terms of next weekend, I'd like to say that Munster will edge it, but I just think Leinster are going to have a bit too much up front for us. In saying that, though, I don't think Leinster's defence is the best, and if we can get on top, get some front football in midfield, I think we'll have a real chance with Earls and Zeebo out wide.
Okay, and Rob, the Leinster opinion there, I assume you're going to say 5 in a row.
I actually think Munster are going to sneak it by 3 to 5 points.
Cute tourism, that's fair enough. Etienne, to come to you, any kind of thoughts on the game yourself? I suppose you're in Limerick, so you'd be shouting for Munster.
I will indeed, just for the sake of staying alive, and that'd be good for all the morale around the city to see the men in red snatching it, and I think it'd be good as well, you know, if the both team make it 100% for a warm up for the Heineken Cup. And secondly, to show that their priority is set on the league, and make a case for the Rabo as well. I think it's important in these times anyway of tension in Europe to show that there's a good game going in Rabo.
Yeah, it's very true. Definitely that this is one of the flagship games of the Rabo, and it certainly should be a great spectacle and a great advertisement for the league. Matt, just to finish up with yourself, I know you said that you're going to be following Leinster this year. Do you think they'll do it, or should the home team get one over on them for once?
I think it's going to be very close. My concern for Munster would be that they've been a bit inconsistent over the last couple of seasons, and obviously if their passing game, like what Penny's trying to bring in, works for them, it could go okay, but it's just a question of what they'll do if they get a bit sloppy with knock-ons, etc. I think Leinster's a little more settled at the moment, so I think Leinster will edge it, but single digits.
Okay, single digits, fair enough. So a bit divided, I'll put it that way. So it's Saturday, RT2. I think the kickoff is 6:45, and it hopefully will be box office. Myself would love Munster to win, but I think the main thing is, you know, no injuries, and that it's a good spectacle, good advertising for the league, and hopefully they get a near enough sellout. It's not sold out at the moment. Hopefully the weather will be good and some people will come on the day and we'll get a good crowd into Limerick. But anyway, on to Ulster, and I don't think any of us actually saw the match, but they did beat Treviso 32-13 at Ravenhill, bonus point win. I know Treviso got a draw last year there. So, Brian, if I can come to you, I know you didn't see it, but any kind of general thoughts on that? Rory Best came back and he got a try. So I think all positives for Ulster, who've been pretty inconsistent this year.
Yeah, I mean, they did an awful start to the season, but they seem to be kind of slowly getting their act together. And I think, you know, after the first two games, there were a lot of people quick to kind of automatically write off Ulster for, you know, the bigger honours for the rest of the season. But I think if you look at them as their squad on paper, they still have fantastic depth. I mean, it's not even close, really. They have the best backline selection in the country. I mean, if you're in a position where you can leave the likes of, you know, Craig Gilroy and Andrew Trimble out of your team, you know, you have a strong backline, and the likes of Stuart Olding, young guys like that, you'd have to think they'd get into either Leinster or Munster sides. And they still have a really good pack as well. I mean, the likes of Rory Best, they've got Ian Henderson, who's a bit of a revelation in the second row and seems to be going on to higher honours there. But look, I think Ulster are going to be okay this year. I don't think there's any need to press the emergency button yet, but I do think one problem they have is with Paddy Jackson's kicking. I mean, I think his general play is normally quite consistently decent, but I mean, his kicking's been atrocious since the start of the year, and I mean, it's not going to do him any favours in the long run. So I think they need to explore other options there, because it's going to end up costing them games.
Yeah, and now they have a tricky match this weekend. They're going to Ospreys, which is not a good place to go for any Irish side. Brian, I'll stick with you on this. How do you see that going? Would a losing bonus point nearly be a good result for Ulster?
I think had Ulster won their opening two games, it would be. But I think they'll be looking for more going over there. It's a hard place to get a win. But, I mean, they've got the team to do it, so I don't see why they shouldn't target a win. Losing bonus point wouldn't be the end of the world, but I think it's important to get Jackson either, you know, get sort him out so he's kicking right, or get someone else kicking, because, you know, you're not going to win any games.
One. Okay, thanks, Brian. And Ospreys were actually playing Connacht last weekend. They gave them a right good beating. It was 26-43 to the Ospreys in Galway. Bonus point for them. Matt, this match wasn't televised, so no one of us saw it, but in terms of a general thoughts on that result, I think Connacht fans would be right to be kind of disappointed by that result. I know Ospreys have a great record against Irish sides and in Ireland as well, but, you know, losing by that margin at home, it's not a great sign.
Yeah, from what I read from the match report, apparently the Connacht defence was a bit weak, which obviously would be disappointing. But I think from Connacht, what they have to concentrate on is trying to get results at home. Obviously, they have, you know, overall the weakest of the four Irish provinces, but they need to try and make the sports ground in Galway there a bit of a bastion for them. So I think, as you say, they would want to have tried to get some points from it, even if it's a losing bonus point, and they want to tighten their defence and try and get that place as somewhere where they can look to get points and give the supporters something to jump up about. So yeah, they will be disappointed by that result, and hopefully things can only get better for them.
Well, you say things can only get better, but they have a very tricky trip this weekend to Italy for Treviso. What would you think about that trip? Be difficult enough for them?
Yeah, given how Treviso has been playing, also the fact obviously it's in Italy, I'd have to favour Treviso to win that game. Although obviously it would be great for Connacht to get some points on the board, but yeah, I think it'll be a tough assignment for them, and certainly once again, this is a match, maybe they can't win it, but they should try and at least try and, you know, improve things, get their defence a bit tighter, keep the score down, and who knows, maybe they can edge it or at least get a losing bonus point. So they need to have some targets for the team to aim for, even if they can't ultimately get the win.
Okay, and Matt, I'll stick with you, of course, because now we'll talk about the Rugby Championship. Of course, there was matches last weekend and the final round of matches this weekend. And first of all, Matt, we'll mention South Africa 28, Australia 8. South Africa got two early tries. They sort of needed the bonus point. They didn't get it in the end. Do you reckon that South Africa might be a bit overrated, and that maybe we shouldn't have expected them to get the four tries?
I'm not sure. I think they'll be very disappointed with that result, because obviously in the first half they were completely dominating Australia, and in fact anyone watching the game thought it might turn into a complete rout. But a couple of things happened after half time. The first thing was that Australia put Will Guinea back in, and he made a big difference, and then South Africa also seemed to go a little bit off the boil, and I think one of their players got a yellow card as well for foul play, so it didn't help them. I mean, I was a bit perplexed by their strategy. At the start of the game, when it was nil all, they had a very kickable penalty and they elected to kick for the corner and didn't score a try. And then they put those couple of tries on, as you said, and headed out to a 20-3 lead, chasing a four-try bonus point. And then they got a couple of penalties, and rather than kicking for the corner, they then decided take shots at goal, which wasn't really necessary, as I don't think Australia was ever a chance of winning that game. So You know, it's very difficult for them this weekend because to win the Rugby Championship, not only do they have to score four tries, they have to stop New Zealand scoring four tries, and they have to stop New Zealand getting within 7 points of them. So I think from a South African point of view, although obviously it was a good victory for them, they will be disappointed that they didn't manage to get the four tries. And it was a bit criminal, really, given that they got two tries so early in the game.
Now, the other match, Matt, was Argentina 15, New Zealand 33. Ben Smith getting a couple of tries. He seems to be scoring tries every second week for New Zealand. You know, Argentina, difficult place to go, a different sort of atmosphere, but I'm sure you'll be happy that New Zealand got the bonus point, and that puts them in the driving seat for the weekend.
That was a real test match, I have to say. Argentina in the first half in particular, I thought, were very impressive. Their scrum, in my opinion at least, is probably the best in world rugby at the moment. I mean, New Zealand doesn't have a bad scrum, neither does South Africa. Obviously, we know that Australia has some problems, but consistently throughout the Rugby Championship, the Argentinian scrum has got the better of the other sides, and Juan Fagalo, their tight head prop, looks to be an exceptional player. I think he plays for Montpellier in the top 14, so Etienne's probably seen a bit of him play. But yeah, in the second half, New Zealand increased the pace of the game. They obviously had a stronger bench and a greater deal of fitness than Argentina, and then, as you say, there were a couple of bits of magic there from Ben Smith that helped get New Zealand over the line. So I was happy to take the result, and obviously getting the fourth try basically with time up on the clock was very rewarding. But looking ahead to the rest of the season, certainly the scrum needs to be improved, and that's an area that Ireland could target or look to target for sure. I mean, I think looking ahead to this weekend's game with South Africa, you know, New Zealand may need to look at what they do about their pack. Aaron Franks had a groin injury, so that might explain why the scrum wasn't going so well. But I'm a big fan of Stephen Luatua, and I'd like to see him get selected. So, yeah, I'll take the win, but it wasn't all roses there.
Yeah, and I mean, like, about the South Africa-New Zealand match, of course, as you mentioned before about the permutation, South Africa have made it very difficult for themselves now, not getting a bonus point that they should have got. Does it take away from the game now that it's very unlikely that South Africa will you know, get the requisite tries and get the requisite points to win the championship, that it's really almost New Zealand's to lose now?
To be honest, I don't think South Africa will care. The one thing they want to do is beat New Zealand. Obviously, their fans would have liked to win the Rugby Championship, but if they beat New Zealand by 10, 15 points and still come second, I think they'll be delighted. I mean, what they're trying to do is score a psychological victory here as we head towards 2015, and they want to lay down a marker. So although, you know, obviously it means that the Rugby Championship is probably not up for grabs this weekend, there's a lot of pride on the line, a bit like the Munster-Leinster game that's coming up. So no, I don't think it takes away from that. I expect it to be a classic test match, particularly at Ellis Park, where New Zealand has struggled in the past. Obviously the most famous match there was the 1995 Rugby World Cup final. I'm delighted they've gone with Ellis Park, because traditionally, or in recent times in Johannesburg, they've used that Soweto Stadium from the Soccer World Cup with those awful Vuvuzela things. So Ellis Park is a traditional rugby stadium. It's an absolute cauldron, and you know, South Africa will have a 16th man in the form of their crowds. So it's going to be very tough for New Zealand.
And if you were to call it, Matt, what would you say? South Africa just to edge it, or can New Zealand get the clean sweep in this year's championship?
I think New Zealand is still a bit better than South Africa at the moment, although the gap is clearly narrowed. I think with McCaw coming back, I think New Zealand will win it, but it'll be a close game. Although obviously South Africa could take it as well. So I do think New Zealand will win it, but it'll be close.
Okay, fair enough. And coming on to the other match on the weekend, which is Argentina hosting Australia. Of course, Matt mentioned there Juan Fagalo. I think he's only 25, the tight end prop, so he's not even in his prime yet. So he could well become a really good player, and he'll be up against a very much maligned Australian scrum. Coming to you, Brian, on Australia, they've been in a bit of a malaise. We've kind of said there it's kind of an era of demise for them at the moment under Ewan McKenzie.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, if Argentina don't beat Australia this weekend, I mean, you're going to have to ask, when exactly are they planning on getting a win in the Rugby Championship? Because they're coming up against one of the weakest Australian sides of the last 20 years. So, I mean, if this isn't a game they're targeting, you know, you're going to have to ask about, you know, the sustainability in the competition. But I mean, in terms of Australia, I think it's pretty sad to see one of the great rugby nations really falling to this level. I mean, I think a big catalyst for this was the Rugby World Cup in 2011, that game against Ireland. It set the tone for what has happened in the last 3 years, where essentially the quality in Australia's front five just isn't there. And I mean, you can't, I mean, to borrow a phrase from George Hook, forwards decide who win matches and backs by how much. It's kind of true in this situation because, I mean, we all know Australia, fantastic talent in the back line with the likes of James O'Connor and Digby Ioane. But, I mean, they really don't have any international front rows anymore, bar maybe Stephen Moore, and he seems even a bit of a spent force at this stage. So, I mean, I don't know where they're going to go from here. I'm not too familiar with underage Australian rugby, but I can't see them. They need a solid three, a solid loose head. I mean, they need some top class. They need James Horwell back anyway for one, but it's looking pretty glum for Australian rugby at the moment. And no. I'd fancy Argentina to get a win.
Now, I know that we would have been saying very similar things last year about Australia going to Argentina and that Argentina would have a great chance of getting their first win, but I think Australia have certainly gotten worse since then. The results have certainly gotten worse, and it's been a very bad couple of months for them. Brian, would you think that almost the kind of emotional side of the game would become very important in a match like this? I think Argentina rely on emotion hugely, and I mean, you only have to look at their captain in Fernandez Labe for that. And you know, you'd worry for Australia that if they don't turn up, that if they're not right mentally, that guys like Labe, Leguizamon, you know, can really get at them and really get into their heads.
Yeah, I mean, Lobby is a fantastic player, but I think obviously Argentina are going to be up for this. They have a really good chance of winning it. But I mean, when you look at the quality that Argentina have in the front row in comparison to Australia's front row, I mean, the Australian front five, I can't think of one player that would get in the Australian front five, bar maybe Horrell when he's fit, that would get in the Welsh, Irish, English, or even, I don't know, the Welsh, Irish, or English packs. I mean, they really just have a lack of depth there. I think that's something Argentina are going to expose. And I mean, mixed with the home advantage, I'm just going to see, I have to go with an Argentinian win. And I hope they do win because, I mean, you know, they deserve a win in the Rugby Championship. They've had a few near misses.
Now, one area of the pitch that Australia might have an advantage is sort of the talent on paper that they have in the backs. But, you know, Matt, coming back to you, Argentina do have some quality there. Do you think that they need to open up Australia to win, or would dominance in the pack and in the set piece be enough?
Yeah, as Brian says, Australia's not playing very well at the moment. So I actually think it's a case for a change where Argentina could probably win this game off 10-man rugby with a dominant pack. I mean, if I look at the game last week against New Zealand, if you look at the various aspects of the game in terms of the scrum, the defence, the line-out, etc., Argentina ticked all the boxes. The one area where they weren't particularly flash was offensively. I think they probably have a bit of an issue at fly half. I mean, Sanchez is kind of solid, but he's not really in the class of a Sexton or a Carter or, you know, anyone like that. So they may, you know, they haven't really been able to score tries this year like what they did last year in the championship. And if anything is going to cost them the game against Australia, it'll be a lack of ability to get across the chalk. But they do have some very good players. I mean, in the back line, Bosch is a very good centre. The two wingers, Imhoff and whatnot, are good players. Fernandez is decent at 15, so I think they can do it. But if anything is going to cost them the game, it'll be a lack of try-scoring ability.
Rob, any thoughts on the match? Argentina at home with a boisterous crowd, you know, they probably won't have a better chance.
Yeah, so just actually about to say, their crowd are starting to get a bit of a name for themselves. They've been flashing lights or lasers in the eyes of players. So I really do think the home crowd effect will maybe push them over for victory.
Yeah, I mean, we saw that, all right. Not the best, I suppose, crowd behaviour, something we're not really used to in rugby. And you'd hope that the Argentinian authorities or somebody can stamp down on that sort of behaviour, because we definitely don't want that being a consistent occurrence. Etienne, maybe a question to you about the French following the championship in general, just before we talk about this match, does the rugby championship get a lot of coverage in France in the likes of Midi Olympique?
It would be covered. It wouldn't be super popular, but people mainly because you know, I don't think a lot of people in France would get up in the morning to watch a game of rugby. But in saying that, I think the fact that Argentina is now in the tournament gathered a bit more of the interest, because a lot of their players, you know, have been trained and formed in top 14. So there'd be a lot of players playing in the top 14. You know, playing against the like of New Zealand, Australia, and South Africa. So it's very interesting to follow them. And I think that the fact that Argentina is playing in this tournament makes it a lot more sexy, to be honest, because it's a whole different atmosphere. It's a whole different kind of play, different tactics. And there's also the fact that the Argentina brings a bit of vice in the game and a totally different spirit, and I think it's good to see them improving in world rugby. We need the like of Argentina, even though, you know, when they play against you, they're the most annoying bunch of people. But it's really nice to watch anyway, because they can come to a peak during a match that is really surprising, because he will come from a totally different culture, and you'll be amazed to see what they do sometimes.
Yeah, thanks for that, Eddie. And Matt, final word on you. Can you call us, or will it be too close to call?
No, I think Argentina will get their first victory here. As Rob said, they've been close on a number of occasions, and I would go with Brian's point. If they can't beat Australia at home, given how Australia's playing at the moment, then it would be very disappointing for them. And I think they know deep down that this is probably their best chance of victory. So I think Argentina will win it probably by about 5 to 10 points, or at least I hope that's what will happen. I sympathise to a certain extent with Australia's plight, but I think it would be great for Argentina to get their initial victory.
And Matt, just a quick side point onto that. I asked a similar question about the Munster-Leinster match. Who would be under more pressure? Who do you think would be more disappointed to lose this match? I'll put it that way to you.
That's a good question, actually. I think Argentina would be more disappointed to lose, but in terms of pressure, it's clearly Australia. I mean, Australia is supposed to be, what are they now, the fourth-ranked side in the world. Argentina's ninth, I think it is, and Ewan McKenzie's obviously had a disastrous start to his campaign. So I think Australia's got the pressure, but I think Argentina would be the more disappointed side to lose, to be honest. I mean, I imagine they'll really be up for this game.
Matt, I have a question for you there in relation to a point Brian made there a few minutes ago. He mentioned that questions of Argentina's legitimacy in this competition might arise if they don't get that elusive first win. From a Southern Hemisphere point of view, what are the crowds expecting really of Argentina? Do they want that win quite soon, or are they maybe looking at if they get one or two wins over the next 5-6 years that they can, maybe sort of start building a base from there?
No, I think it's getting to the point where people will start to think that Argentina do need to get some victories at home in particular. I mean, if they go into a third season of the Rugby Championship next year without a victory, people will question that a little bit. I mean, I think they've actually done pretty well in the Rugby Championship. The only game that they really haven't come to the races in was the starting game of this season, where they got thrashed by South Africa, but I think people will start to expect them to get victories, particularly against Australia at the moment. So, yeah, certainly it is a big game this weekend, and I like having them there, and as long as the games are competitive. I mean, they've certainly given the All Blacks a good run for their money in the last few games, so I think they're worth being there, but it probably is time that they actually started to get some victories.
Okay, Matt, thanks for that, and that's the Rugby Championship coming up this weekend. Both of the matches on Sky Sports for you there. So, and now on to the top couture, the top 14 in France, and at last the serious stuff. And first of all, Etienne, we'll talk about Cast against Racing Metro. Cast 16, Racing 12. Of course, Irish fans always watching out for Johnny Sexton. That was kind of a big match of the weekend. How did you, first of all, did you watch the match? And what were your impressions?
Well, I'd be honest, I it's one of the few I didn't watch because I knew that that wouldn't be super stuff. You know, Racing Away is not a client on 80 Minutes Rugby in front of your TV. But Cask can produce serious stuff. I would have bet on a bonus point for Cask. It was pretty daft rugby, to be honest. I wasn't impressed by the highlights of it. Still, I can you know, see a few players like the like of Lamera, for example, who are very coming very nicely. He was a big hope for France 3 or 4 years ago before he injured himself very seriously, and he's coming back very strong. So it's very promising. On the Racing point of view, I think there's still a lot of work to do with that team. It's not coming as fast as people want it, and I still rest my case from the beginning. I think it was a mistake to try to bring all the new players at once from the beginning. It should have been put in place a lot more gradually. So it's going to take some time. I don't think they're overhyped, Matt. I just think you know, Rome wasn't built in a day, and you know, it's not PlayStation rugby we're playing here. I think come the end of the season, and if they finish in the top six, which I believe they will be hard to beat on the knockout stage.
Okay, and Etienne, it was an absolutely terrible weekend if you're a Biarritz fan, because Biarritz lost the Basque Derby at Bayonne. They didn't even get a point. Brive drew, and we'll talk about Oyonnax later, beating Toulon. A lot of pressure on Serge Blanco. You had to ask questions about him possibly resigning from the club. Of course, he had plenty to say, I think, about referees and other people wanting Biarritz to be relegated. It's a very dark time for Biarritz, for the club, for the supporters and the players, because if they keep losing these matches against, I suppose, similarly placed teams, they're going to go down.
Yeah, it's very worrying. You can see now a lot of journalists, you know, hanging around Biarritz like vultures, and grab any kind of meaty information about what's going to happen internally in Biarritz. It's not easy to be in Serge Blanco's position. I don't think he handles it very, very well either. In terms of refereeing, you have to say that they have been under quite strange decisions on the pitch against Bayonne. I've seen that match, and it was really hard to think that, you know, the referee could, you know, go, you know, so many times the wrong way for Biarritz, especially when you see the videos. But again, the level of their game is not up to Biarritz standards and as well top 14. And considering you know, the amount of points now, they are 10 points behind safety zone. It's going to be a very tough season. It's hard to believe now that they're going to save themselves, even though we're only one third down in the season.
Yeah, certainly. They definitely need to pick up some victories. The final match I'd like to talk about from last weekend was Oyonnax beating Toulon. Now, in terms of finance, in terms of star names, you know, it's the ultimate opposite, you could say. Etienne, Oyonnax are just surprising everyone every week. I think they've beaten everybody that they've played at home, bar Stade Francais, who they just about lost out to. Massive shock. I think one of the biggest shocks of the season so far. You know, great result for them, and Talon put back in their box.
Yeah, well, Oyonnax at home, a very solid team. They have shown it against Clermont already. You know, only Stade Francais made it in Oyonnax. I think Stade Francais is the best team of the beginning of this championship so far. But Oyonnax, you know, is going to be a tough cookie at home all season. Even the like of Toulon, you know, broke their teeth on them. Having said that, I don't know if they will gather enough points to stay in top 14. That would be the fairy tale story of the top 14 this year if they could. That would be nice to see. But you know, come the first injuries, and we'll see them struggling, in my opinion.
Well, of course, our Leinster fan, Porrig, who's a regular on this show, he moved to Geneva in the summer, and Oyonnax, just down the road from Geneva, I'm informed, and suddenly Oyonnax doing very well, so maybe Porrig, he's a good omen, but we'll see. Coming on to next weekend, Etienne, the big match is Toulon against Clermont-Auvergne in the Allianz State, or the excuse me, the Allianz Riviera Stadium in Nice, a new stadium for the Nice football team. Talon are making a trip down there. It's a big marquee match for the top 14. Etienne, are you excited by it, and how do you think it'll go?
Yeah, I'm excited to see you know, this match, especially in the Allianz Riviera. And well, it's revenge of the Heineken Cup final, but I don't think any of the teams will be falling into this and will be revengeful. It's a matter of you know, taking the points. I think Clermont are only going there to take 1 point if they can. Well, Toulon will be trying to go for the three tries difference. There's also the fact that Parra is cited for punching last weekend. I don't know if he'll be on hearing before that match.
Nalanga is injured as well, but Rougerie is supposed to be back. So good news and bad news, you could say.
Yeah, I wouldn't expect Rougerie to be firing up flames at this age on the match back from injury. I don't think he'll be starting, but it'll be an interesting match to see. I'm a bit worried about Fofana playing every week 80 minutes. You know, he's been in New Zealand. He played a lot in New Zealand as well. Didn't get many holidays. He's going to play a lot of time as well in November in the internationals. How long is it going to last is the question. Coming back to the game in the Allianz Riviera, 35,000 people attending that match is already full. If the weather is there, it's going to be a cracker, I'd say, and we'll be all set up for Heineken Cup rugby after that. I predict a Toulon win.
And just as a kind of a side point, there's been a bit of an issue with whistling or booing or jeering at a certain Armitage, who plays full back for Talon, and Talon are very angry, writing statements on the website telling fans that they're awful, that they shouldn't boo anybody, any player, or whistle at any player. Now, we don't want to see any whistling or any jeering really from rugby fans. It's not what we're about in general. But is there a bit of a kind of but it's Delon and he kind of deserves it?
Of course, that's Delon and he deserves it. But having said that, I think it's not a good thing either. You know, we should keep this mentality we had when the game wasn't so professional, and try to, you know, to be friends, you know, as much as you can, on and off the pitch. You know, it's eye for eye, tooth for tooth. But then this is the kind of attitude I have seen as well, you know, in the championship in Argentina, the All Black kicker being aimed at with the laser. And I think these new things are coming into the game of rugby. I don't see it as a good thing. So, you know, if people could stop, you know, whistling at Dylan, I think the game would gain a bit of respect.
Indeed. And yeah, I think a little bit of it is fine for a while, but I honestly, at the moment, I think it's a bit like the New Zealand fans booing Quade Cooper. It just got a bit old and it got a bit silly and got a bit dragged out, and I think we were kind of sick of it after a while, even though it may have been slightly deserved, shall I say. But another big match, well, I suppose another big match that'll be televised in terms of Irish fans watching it will be Racing against Grenoble, which will be on Setanta, Ireland on Saturday at 5:30. You'd expect Etienne Racing should win this comfortably and run in a couple of tries, which is something they haven't been doing at all so far this season.
Yeah, I expect Racing to win, but the question on that match is it will be the way they will play, because that's the worrying thing at the moment, is that they aren't clicking really much. They aren't breaking the line as much as you would expect with the individualities that they have in the line, in every line of the team. So yes, they will win. Will they get the bonus points, which would be new for them? I don't know, because Grenoble is a team that will go out to not to close the game. So it's going to be interesting to see.
And another match, just to finish up, would be Toulouse hosting Stade Francais. Of course, Stade Francais are top of the league, but do you think it would be a bridge too far for Stade to go to La Ville Rose and get the victory?
Well, that's the banana skin for Toulouse, because actually Toulouse have a tough Heineken Cup to go to when Stade Francais have only a Portuguese team to play the following week. So they'll be coming with their full team in Toulouse and trying as much as they can to create the upset. So if I was to watch a top 14 game, which I will do actually this weekend, that will be this one definitely, because you're going to see Toulouse trying to preserve the 4 points at home against a very good and very good playing Parisian team coming, you know, to get a shocker in Toulouse. So and they managed to create a lot of game. I think Quesada is doing a great work for Stade Francais. It's nice to see them back and to see them in their new stadium. I think that's the, you know, that's the kind of the one of the good stories of top 14 this season is the level of play of Stade Francais, with players like Bonneval and Plisson, who are a pleasure to watch at the moment.
Yeah, and thanks for that, Etienne. But there was another incident at the weekend in France, which really, I suppose, marred the weekend's rugby. And it was a prop, Alexandre Barossi, who unfortunately was left in a coma after a collapsed scrum. You know, we know the risks that rugby players take, and it was a very sad story. I know, Etienne, he is... had surgery, and I think he's out of the coma now, and that he'll be having tests on his mobility. And you know, we really hope that everything will be okay, that he'll be able to live life to the full. We're not sure about obviously his rugby career is probably over, but we hope that everything will go all right with his daily life anyway.
Yeah, I think it's a sad story. It's just a reminder for everyone who gets his. He studs us on any given Sunday that you know, these things can happen. You need to be, you know, focused on everything you're doing on the pitch. Rugby is a contact game, and I hope Alexandre will recover safely. You know, this is the things that happen. He's been taken out of the coma today, and he had feelings on the extremities of his hands so far. And tomorrow they'll be going into more thorough tests. So hopefully, you know, as much time as it will take, he will get back to at least a normal life. We're not even talking about playing rugby at this stage.
Okay, thanks, Etienne, for that. And of course, we wish Alexandra all the best in his recovery from everybody associated with this show. And anyway, we'll finish up with some listener questions. And William, who's actually a contributor to the show, of course, he was asking a question, and I'll put it to you, Matt. He said, do you think that the ERC team's performances will be affected by the ongoing mess over the future of European rugby? So, you know, will this all this arguing be hanging over the players' heads, basically?
I think undoubtedly it will. I mean, in terms of performance of the players in the field, I'm not sure about that. In fact, if anything, they might try and play a bit better, given that they want to advance the cause for the Rabo. But in saying that, you know, I saw in the news today that Warburton hasn't been able to sign a game with Cardiff because he's still waiting to see what happens, etc. So maybe not so much affecting the Irish provinces, although we know that there's rumours about Heaslip and Sean O'Brien going to France, etc. But some of those Welsh players who are obviously being tempted to France by big money, it is, you know, it might be affecting them. So I think it is going to come into play, and this obviously seems to be dragging on for a lot longer than everyone would want. So whether it affects the pitch performance, I'm not sure, but it's got to play a role in there somewhere anyway.
Rob, what do you think about that? Will it affect the performances and the matches?
I can't see it really affecting the performances. Obviously, the Celtic nations will be maybe hoping to get one over on their French and English rivals. I can see maybe the French teams don't have the best reputation for playing strong sides once it's clear they're not going to get through. So maybe that might happen earlier if the team owners are trying to push their agenda, something like that maybe.
Yeah, and there's another question from William there, and I'll put it to yourself, Rob. William asks, why do some teams seem fixated on the guy in the 10 shirt being the goal kicker? Often the 10 is the best for the job, but when he clearly isn't, what is the solution? Here are a few guys who didn't play 10 but were entrusted with the job. Some of them were even great kickers. And he gives a long list of them here. Tom Kiernan, Michael Kiernan, Simon Mason, Ollie Campbell, Neil Jenkins, Percy Montgomery, of Sterling Mortlock, John Eales as well. So we do seem to have a bit of an obsession with the 10s taking the kicks. In other countries, it's not really the case. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I'd agree with William. We do seem to have an obsession with the 10s just taking the kicks, and maybe it's time for a culture change. Because I know sort of at schoolboy level and younger levels, players like Rob Kearney and Conor Murray for Gary Owen, wasn't it, that they were the place kickers. And it's a case of if you don't use it, you lose it. And if we can saw from the weekend there, Kearney was made an awful kick. So it's definitely something that maybe as many backs as possible, or maybe our forwards too. If Devin Toner knows how to kick a ball, we should have him, you know, place kicking.
I mean, it's a problem for Ireland in the sense that there's not a lot of other players outside of 10s in Ireland who are goal kickers. I mean, I know that there's players like Rob Kearney and Conor Murray who might have kicked goals in their earlier years, but at the moment in the four provinces, it's always the 10s that seem to take the goal kicking. It is a problem in terms of players like Paddy Jackson, who, as we touched on, his general play has been okay, but his goal-kicking would be a real concern for an international match, such that I think at the moment, if you had Paddy Jackson playing 10, you'd have to have someone else on the field as a backup goal-kicker. So I agree with William, it is an issue in Ireland and that people seem fixated on it. I can only see it being fixed if other players start taking the goals for the provinces who aren't playing 10, but yeah, it's certainly an issue, right?
Okay, thanks for that, Matt. And yeah, that's it for Talking Rugby Podcast, episode 96. 96 shows, who could have believed it? So I'd like to thank Matt, Rob, Etienne and Brian for their time this evening, and we'll be back next week to look ahead to the next Heineken Cup, and it could well be the final Heineken Cup. Thanks, lads.